The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. Our third and final hour together today here on this Thursday, the 26th day of August. We're going to chat with John Ray, looking to regain the House District 10 seat that he once occupied. And we'll talk to him in 60 seconds real quick. Just the latest breaking news. The Pentagon has indeed confirmed an explosion outside the Kabul airport. Casualties unclear. President Biden has been briefed. When we woke up this morning, and what I spent a lot of the first hour talking to you about, is the horrible disconnect between the urgency of trying to get people to the airport. I mean, that's what the last few days and presumably the next few leading up to this disastrous August 31st deadline is like, we got to get people to the airport. We got to get people to the airport. What airport? The municipal airport there in Kabul, because we can't use the one up in Bagram in our military base because we bugged out of there. Yeah, thanks. So we've got that one airport, that one runway, and the danger, the alerts, the security advisories this morning were that the advice is going out to not go to the airport because of the suspicion of a possible terror attack, possible suicide bomber, and that may indeed be exactly what has happened this morning. Pentagon confirming an explosion outside the Kabul airport. We will keep track of that as we proceed. So talking to Jake Elzey last hour about a lot of Afghanistan, where he served, his ascendancy from House District 10, which he had just freshly won in 2020. Then you have Ron Wright sadly passing away, creating a vacancy in District 6 in Congress. So Jake Elzey now occupies that, leaving a vacancy in House District 10. Yesterday, we talked to Brian Harrison and said, so we had a motivation question. It was like, hey, you were running for Congress, so now the pivot to House District 10. Why is that? Today, John Ray joins us, and it was a seat that he had until a couple of years ago. So it's now he wants it back, and it's great to welcome John Ray. John, welcome to the show. How you doing, sir?
Hi, I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks for having me, and good morning.
My pleasure to have you. So first off, the motivation question. You were in this seat for a few years, came out saying, hey, this isn't a lifetime gig, and now it's like, well, you know, I think I want it back. Why is that?
Sure. I did serve in the seat for 6 years, from January of 2015 until just earlier this year. My term ended on January of 2021. I announced my retirement after the 2019 regular session, and it's hard to remember, but that was a time before COVID, and the world has changed quite a bit since then. And that's motivated me to go back and work on some of these important legislative issues that have come to the forefront because of COVID. One being, overuse of executive power that we saw during this pandemic through mask mandates and business shutdowns. I want to go back and address that and dial that back to make sure that we don't see those types of things happening again. And then, of course, we've seen an explosion in real estate values that's been brought on in part by the pandemic. And that's going to mean an explosion in your property taxes, which has been an issue that I worked on diligently previously. And I want to go back and work on that some more. So that kind of motivated me and got me energized to go back to Austin.
Let me take the first thing you mentioned, because it's been an interesting ride, the notion of executive power, usually referring to the governor. It's been an odd ride for him. Lately, the governor right now is fighting all kinds of fights, saying, hey, no mask mandates, no vaccine mandates in certain realms, et cetera. And that scores conservative points. At the earliest stages of COVID, Abbott got just filleted for not being Ron DeSantis enough. And there were a lot of conservatives who said that this admittedly conservative governor of an admittedly conservative state was not quite as liberty prone as he might have been. And a lot of people said, does the governor have a little too much executive power? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there, you know, we saw the governor do it. We saw mayors do it. We saw county judges do it. I think they were acting under some statutes that were enacted at kind of the height of the Cold War that were, you know, passed with envisioning a situation where we had a nuclear holocaust and perhaps a large chunk of the government was wiped out, the legislative branch, et cetera, et cetera. And the executive, whoever the executive might be at that particular moment, might need to exercise some emergency powers in the face of that kind of unexpected disaster. But, you know, I don't think those statutes were passed with this pandemic that we had in mind. And I don't think that governors and mayors and county judges should be exercising that type of power, especially without any kind of legislative oversight or constraint.
That's fine. So then let's take care of the rest of the COVID stuff and go on to some other things. Just in a landscape filled with mask arguments and vaccine arguments and mandates here and
right.
You know, et cetera. What would you like? If you were in Austin now, what would you like to see done? What hasn't been done that you wanted to get done? Just sort of what things have occurred to you in watching the special sessions and how we've sort of legislatively and governmentally dealt with the pandemic?
Yeah, sure. Well, I certainly think that a couple of things. I think that the legislature should have a say. So, you know, we have a great system in Texas, which is a system of limited government where the legislature meets very infrequently. But we've kind of seen a little bit of a weakness in this particular situation where the legislature was not able to convene to have a voice in some of these mandates and these business shutdowns. Because I think if the legislature had been able to meet, we certainly would have seen a different outcome. So, there was a bill proposed during the regular session. I believe Senator Birdwell was carrying it on the Senate side. And I think that it had some excellent provisions in it to sort of have a check and balance on this executive power. So I would like to, I'd like to see us enact legislation to that effect. There's a number of other, I wasn't sure if you were wanting me to address some of the other things.
Feel free. Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the big issue is the election integrity issue, which is always kind of a pending issue before the legislature, but sort of brought to the forefront even more by the pandemic and some of the questions we have regarding the election process, both in Texas and in other states. You know, the Texas House is actually addressing that bill today, mm-hmm. I believe. But I think that's certainly an important issue. That, if it's not passed before I get there, I want to lend my voice to passing a strong election integrity bill, which, in large part addresses a very proactive liberal, if you will, agenda by the Harris County Clerk or Elections Office, where they did a lot of proactive things that we need to make sure that are kept in check. And so I want to lend my voice to that as well. So that's really the biggest pending issue I feel in the special session.
And there have been a handful of other things that the governor's put onto first one and now a second special session. Have there been any of those things
right.
that you've been glad to see move forward? It's been a big year for pro-life, big year for constitutional carry, interesting skirmishes
right.
over gender stuff. I mean, what in the remaining issues of things that lawmakers have tried to tackle, what's caught your eye?
Well, there's really four additional issues on the special session agenda: critical race theory, border security, social media censorship, and restrictions on abortion-inducing drugs. So, I there's a lot to unpack there, but I would probably start with the critical race theory issue. I strongly support banning the teaching of CRT in schools. I think that the purpose, and historically, if you look back at the beginnings of our state versus a republic, our public education system was designed to ensure that we had a very literate voter base who could read the Constitution, read the Bible, and make informed decisions in the voting booth, as well as be patriotic citizens so that if we faced a foreign invader, folks were ready to stand up and defend their homeland. CRT is the exact opposite of that. I mean, I believe this is the greatest country on earth. I believe in American exceptionalism, and I do not feel that America is in any way systemically racist, and I don't think that that should be taught in our public schools. So I'd like to get back and add my voice to that fight as well. And then, of course, we're seeing some disastrous border security policies from the Biden administration. And, I've had a lot of experience in my prior sessions with the border security fight. We've previously added additional DPS troopers to the border region. We have tried to criminalize activities that we see occurring along the border to make it easier for Texas law enforcement to arrest people who are illegally entering the country. And there's a lot more to be done. And I think we've smartly used technology in my prior sessions, and I want to continue funding that, find fiscally conservative ways to fund that. So that's another big, strong area.
Let me, in our last couple of minutes, John Ray with us, W-R-A-Y, Ray for Texas on Twitter, and Ray, F-O-R, the word Ray for Texas.com, the campaign website. There was something noticeably not given some attention in the special session. Talked to the governor about this, and it's some of the gender issues. Governor wrote a nice letter to Family and Protective Services Commissioner saying, hey, can we get a finding that the surgeries to change boys to girls to boys, if that's even possible, are indeed child abuse. And that very nice letter came back. And then some people said, yeah, but wait a minute. What about chemical castration? And what about, some of this gender mutilation and even some of the bizarre counseling and things? We'd like that identified as child abuse as well. Would that be a cause that you would align with?
Absolutely. And I do feel that you didn't mention it, but there's also these drugs that are given by certain doctors to delay puberty mm-hmm. and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I do feel, A, that that is child abuse. Secondarily, I think that physicians or healthcare providers that do these types of treatments are possibly subjecting themselves to losses of their licenses as well as lawsuits and civil liabilities. But I do think that should be clarified in the law, that this is illegal. I do support CPS or other state agencies declaring this to be child abuse and taking appropriate action accordingly. So I'm fully aligned with that. I fully support this gender modification on children. Children are just not of the right state of mind or mature enough to make these decisions. And I, of course, worry sometimes about, the motivations of some of the parents who do it as well. So I don't agree with gender modification for children whatsoever, and would certainly support legislation to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Do you wish that was on the special session right now? And if it were, do you think it would pass?
I do, and I do think it would pass, and it's certainly something that I'll be looking to work on in the 2023 regular session, certainly.
John Ray, for state rep in House District 10, W-R-A-Y, Ray for, not the numeral for, but the actual word F-O-R, RayForTexas.com, and that's the Twitter feed as well, Ray for Texas. John, pleasure. Thank you. Good health on the campaign trail. Please appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
John Ray, Mark Davis, 922, 660 AM, The Answer. All right, it is 928. We'll be in the newsroom with Gordon in 2 minutes. Let me give you an update on the very, very latest about the suicide bombing outside a gate at Kabul's main airport. When we woke up this morning, one of the first things I shared with you in the 7 o'clock hour was the incredibly frustrating dichotomy of the urgency of needing to get people to the airport, plus the advisory that came out overnight that said, don't go to the airport, because they had just solid screaming intel of a security risk, the possibility. I mean, it was literally this specific possibility of suicide bombers at the Kabul airport. And so what do we have now? Suicide bombers at the Kabul airport. The president has been briefed, and apparently at least 3 U.S. troops hurt in these suicide bombers. Explosions at the Kabul airport. Moments ago on Fox News, 7th District of Tennessee Congressman Mark Green with reaction.
Well, it's just gut-wrenching. And I'm getting calls from people at the gate too. What I'm hearing, it's 2 different explosions that happened near simultaneously. 20 to 30 Afghans are non-American wounded, about 3 American wounded. We get calls like you got from Carl there multiple times a day into our office, and it's just, it's gut-wrenching. It's humiliating. And I agree with HR. I mean, this was a loss that this president voiced on our country. You know, to think that you could sit there and negotiate with people who had already broken the agreement. This was supposed to be a power-sharing agreement, and yet they took over the country. And here's Blinken wanting to do more deals, trust them more. I mean, it's just absurd.
You know, the CIA director, Bill Burns, met with the Taliban. You know, that was just earlier this week. Presumably to talk about the security at the airport, but possibly to share intel about what could happen there. And unfortunately, this explosion proves that. I mean, what do you think of this administration, the commander-in-chief? Like, the commander-in-chief basically, I don't know whether he trusts the intel community or not, trusts the Taliban or not. I mean, at this point, we had a global coalition, and now it feels very much like America alone, sir.
Well, we know the Italians flew an aircraft out this morning, and it was fired upon from the ground. So we still have friends there. They're just not coordinating with us because we're abandoning them, too. You know, you asked specifically about the president. I think one of two conditions or one of two things are happening. He's either lying to the American people or he is so confused about what's going on in Afghanistan. And both of those scenarios are really, really bad.
Indeed, they are. It's Congressman Mark Green of the 7th District of Tennessee. All right, let's hop into the bottom of the hour news. I'll continue to keep an eye on this. We have an appointment set with this wonderful gentleman, Michael Knowles. You ever heard of this guy? Wonderful young conservative, done a lot of writing, a lot of commentating and such. And he has a book out about the attacks on free speech, especially in the conservative wings. So let's go ahead and keep that appointment. And then we'll come out after that and I'll give you the very latest on what we know about the explosions outside the Kabul airport that make a difficult situation even more difficult. Prayers for every American that is trying to get out of there, for every American that is trying to help people get out of there. May God help us through this very, very tough situation. It's 9:31. I'm Mark Davis, and Gordon Griffin's in the newsroom. All right. How many things can we keep track of in one news day? 9:37, home stretch half hour. In just a moment, we are going to meet an extremely impressive young man, Michael Knowles, who has a new book, and I realize that it's actually the second book of his that I have familiarity with. But first, real quick, because there's breaking news all around us, it's not just a suicide explosion, but also an apparent gunfight. Three U.S. Marines injured in the Kabul attack this morning, again, as the sun was rising. As we started the program, I told you, look, the horrible disconnect is everybody, we're trying to get everybody to the airport. There's huge urgency. Get to the airport, get to the airport, get to the airport, get you out of this hellhole that Afghanistan has become. And then all of a sudden, hey, guess what? Along comes the advisory, don't go to the airport. You know, for God's sake, don't go to the airport. Why? Solid intel of some type of impending terrorist attack. And guess what? In the last hour, hour and a half, that has in fact happened. Apparently two suicide bombings and apparently some exchange of gunfire, at least three U.S. Marines injured in that attack. We may have a Pentagon briefing within minutes, and if so, I'll hold on to that and give you a little bit of that after we talk to Michael Knowles, which let's do right now. This is a wonderfully, wonderfully gifted young man. My familiarity with him was through some of the writing that he's done, I guess, dating back about 5 years with the Daily Wire. And the occasion now is his wonderful, wonderful book called Speechless, that's attacks on speech and attacks on thought. And it turns out that it's not the first book of his that I have rather enjoyed. About 4 years ago, I don't know if a publisher sent it to me or somebody mailed it to me or whatever, little tongue-in-cheek thing. And it was called Reasons to Vote for Democrats, a Comprehensive Guide. And I thought, what is somebody sending this to me? And I always like to do intel. Speaking of intel, I like to do oppo research and stuff, figure out what the other side is thinking. So somebody sends me this book called Reasons to Vote for Democrats, a Comprehensive Guide. Open the book, 266 empty pages. So this is actually the second Michael Knowles book that I have come to appreciate. Michael, pleasure to meet you. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for reading not just my new book, but my first magnum
exactly.
opus. I appreciate it. You've read the book without words and the book that is entirely about words.
And so they both contain a certain level of eloquence. I don't know how better to put it. Hey, give everybody the Michael Knowles 101, because, dude, you're like 31 or something, and you plug into Daily Wire, start doing some writing, start doing some thinking and some talking and stuff. Tell us about the last few years of your life and this wonderful ascendancy that you've enjoyed.
Well, thank you so much. It has been a bit of a wild ride, and I do think I am the only person in history who's ever gotten his own show for not writing a book. But that is what happened. I was pals with the guys at the Daily Wire. I had been writing a bit for them, had been going on some of the shows just occasionally, right when it was starting up. I mean, we were doing those shows early on in the pool house of Jeremy Boring, who runs the joint over here. And as the Daily Wire took off, I published this little joke book, Reasons to Vote for Democrats, just to irritate my Democrat relatives and friends. And it hit number one on the Amazon charts. And so I started going on more shows and writing a bit more. And then we've had my show over here. I also do a show called The Book Club at PragerU. And last year launched a show with Senator Cruz called Verdict. And then decided I would actually try my hand at writing a book with words. And I must tell you, it is more difficult.
Yes.
It does take more time. But I did think it was important because, you know, I know a lot of conservatives believe that the politically correct language, the attacks on speech, you know, it's kind of a sideshow. All of the debates about the gender pronouns seem kind of silly. But I think that the manipulation of language is the most important and effective tool that the left has in its political arsenal. And I think that it is how the left has really managed to upend our whole culture. And unfortunately, I think that conservatives, even though we've ostensibly been fighting against this thing for at least 3-4 decades, we don't really understand what it is. And so the harder we fight, the more ground it seems that we lose.
There is the old adage, and it came up like in the last hour of the show, that the first part of any political battle, any ideological battle, the first part is a battle over language. And as fresh as today's headlines, you have things like Black Lives Matter, a self-evidently true sentence that unfortunately is now attached to a Marxist anti-family organization. We had a teacher locally, Michael, who has this lovely Black Lives Matter poster in his wall, and the school district wants him to take it down. He's refusing, and he's not like a radical black guy. I think he's a self-loathing white guy. I have no idea, but he just thinks, why do they want me to take down a sign that's just about me caring against police brutality? And then you look at anti-racism. Everybody's against racism, but anti-racism requires you to posit that we are a racist hellhole of a country and then begin from that starting block. So language, it always matters.
Well, whoever frames the issue wins the debate, and that's what the left has done for many years now. I mean, this is why there's such a battle in newsrooms, in the government, even on social media, over whether to call a foreign national who happened to come into our country illegally. Do you call him an illegal alien or an undocumented American? Well, if he's an illegal alien, then he has no right to be here. But if he's an undocumented American, of course he does. His only issue is he doesn't have documents, so we ought to print those out for him and get them all ready to go. This is why the battle over pronouns is so decisive. You know, when people say to me, oh, Michael, who cares whether you call a man who thinks that he's a woman he or she? My answer is always, the left cares. The left is investing a lot of time and money and energy into getting us all to call men she and women he. And the reason for that, of course, is that if a man who thinks that he's a woman is really a trans woman, as they say, or just a woman, or is she, then he has every right to go into the women's bathroom.
Of course.
He's a woman. He's
of
a
course.
She. That's it's for women. But
but
if he is not, if he is a he, then he has no right to go into the women's bathroom. And he has no right to compete in women's sports. He has no right to do any of these things. So I think what the left understands is that language carries with it whole premises, a whole political vision. And so if they can force us all to use their words, if they can redefine the terms, they believe they can redefine reality. And they've had a considerable amount of political success doing it.
Yeah, I mean, because the pronouns. I wrote a column about the Caitlyn Jenner candidacy for Newsweek, and I pulled this off somehow. I wrote it completely without pronouns. And it's funny, and it doesn't seem clumsy. I'm very proud of that. There's no way in the world that I could call Caitlyn Jenner she. I cannot do it. I will not do it because Caitlyn Jenner is not a woman. Factually, is not. However, if I call Caitlyn Jenner he, it's like, hey Bruce, what's the matter with you? I didn't want to be. It was not rude. You know what I mean? I didn't want to start an argument. I wanted people to pay attention to what I was saying, so I avoided pronouns altogether. But you're truly on to something here in that we have in this gender battle of when you have someone who's trying to turn their son into a daughter, it's called gender confirmation, not gender hijacking or gender sidelining. It's we are in fact confirming what the kid feels like. Again, language, language, language. The Michael Knowles book is speechless, controlling words, controlling minds. How much attention do you pay to the huge hotbed for all this, places that used to be arenas for free and open public debate, our higher education?
Well, the universities are really at the heart of this language transformation. You know, in Speechless, I trace the history of this because I think that PC goes back further than a lot of people think. It's not just 30 or 40 years old. I think it goes back about 100 years. It begins largely in the universities. It flourishes much later, largely in the universities. And the universities continue to harbor it today and continue to grow the phenomenon today. And this is sort of natural. And obviously, these leftist intellectuals are going to be the ones to be debating all of these things and developing them. But I think it has a jarring lesson for conservatives, which is that we flatter ourselves to believe that we understand free speech and censorship better than the left does. We think that their manipulation of language is crazy and kooky and nuts. And it's bizarre, but it's brilliant too. It's really clever. And I think that we underestimate these guys at our own peril, because the leftist intellectuals who developed political correctness were extraordinarily intelligent. In many ways, they understood free speech better than conservatives do. And that's how they've been so effective at manipulating language to their own political ends. So I think we conservatives need to really rethink what we're doing here. I try to take them very seriously in Speechless. I think that we should learn some lessons from these leftist intellectuals who I think rightly understood that political correctness, wokeism, cancel culture, whatever you want to call it, it's not just a battle between free speech and censorship. In fact, I don't think that's the battle at all. I think it's a battle between competing sets of standards. It's a battle, you know, every society is going to have some taboos, some things are going to be off limits. And so what the left is doing is just shifting all those taboos, shifting all those standards. And meanwhile, conservatives have been fighting a battle that actually is not at the heart of what we're trying to do here.
There are a number of ways to dip into the world of Michael Knowles, and you'll be rewarded by all of them. First is to go ahead and order Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. It's on Amazon. Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. Check out the Michael Knowles show. Check out stuff he does at Daily Wire. The Twitter feed is Michael J. Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Michael, congratulations all up and down the line, and I hope we can talk every once in a while because it's awesome, and I deeply appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Our pleasure. That is Michael Knowles. Check him out. And again, Twitter feed is at Michael J. Knowles. And the book is Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. Well, three U.S. Marines injured in this attack at the Kabul airport. If just when you think it's not possible for this to get worse, it does. Today is August 26th. That leaves the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th before we get to this deadline of August 31st. Congressman Jake Elzey was on about an hour ago. Check the podcast. Rhonda puts up the podcast about within an hour after every show. And boy, we had some great guests today amid all the breaking news. And Jake, who served in Afghanistan, said that we need to tell the Taliban we may not be gone by August 31st at all. If you attempt to stop us from getting Americans out of Afghanistan, we will kill you. And then the question becomes, does Joe Biden have the spine to do that? Does Joe Biden have a team that will help him do that? This Antony Blinken, this Jake Sullivan, these pinhead academics, is that even something? Is that a language that they even speak? Does Joe Biden even really have, and I'm dead serious about this, I don't throw this around as a barb, is he even fully cognitively aware of what's going on here? This is how bad it is. When things are this bad, remember God remains in control. Pray for these people, these countrymen of ours, and these people from other countries who are our allies and just good people trying to get out of there. 950, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. So, I wanted to get something significant to take us out. Little Casting Crowns. Because this is genuinely bad. Right? And I know every day is genuinely bad. Biden is still president. The culture is, you know, going into the ditch. There's always something we can, you know, shake a fist at. But this Afghanistan situation is terrible for the ages, and it's going to require every ounce of prayer we have. And I was sitting there thinking, what is the element that we need? We need it. We have it from our troops. Had it when they were there. We'd have it if they were still there. We need it from our president. We need it from our leaders. We need it from our people. Courage, the spine, the will to stand up to evil and do something about it, to handle things correctly and tell these monsters, we're out when we're out, and if you try to stop us, we will kill you. That's the definition of courage. Casting Crowns with Courageous to take us out. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland, thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. News ace Gordon Griffin, I'm Mark Davis. God bless our country, our troops, our families, and these people we're trying to get out of Afghanistan. Lord, help us. Mike Gallagher is next, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Friday show. God bless. Have a good day.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. Deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.